This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Masks back on. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay on this Tuesday, August 3rd. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Louisiana and the Bay Area reinstate indoor mask mandates as COVID cases rise amid the more contagious Delta variant.
Democrats put pressure on the White House to prevent evictions as a moratorium ends.
Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, who tested positive for COVID, says he's glad he was vaccinated.
And since the pandemic began, it's been a culture war.
You're either convinced that getting vaccinated and wearing a mask puts you in line with science and with government officials and with public health officials who you don't respect or trust, or you're on the other side and you think that you have a public duty or a responsibility for the common good.
Dennis Wagner of USA Today will be here in about 10 minutes with that story. Louisiana and seven San Francisco Bay Area counties will mandate that people wear masks indoors starting this week, while New York City officials are recommending that residents do so to curb rising COVID cases. In Louisiana, Governor John Bel Edwards reinstated a statewide indoor mask mandate effective tomorrow for all people 5 years or older. The mandate will last until September 1st, if necessary.
It's at least twice as contagious as the previous strains of COVID. And that's why we all need to wear masks.
In Florida, where Governor Ron DeSantis has resisted mask mandates and vaccine requirements, new COVID cases topped 21,680, the state's highest one-day total since the start of the pandemic. Miami Beach Mayor Dan Gelber told ABC he's baffled by the governor's stance.
He's really tried to make this as hard as possible. And I think, unfortunately, just to sort of curry favor with a small group of supporters who, frankly, are the ones most likely not to wear masks and most likely not to get vaccinated.
Major retailers and restaurant chains such as Home Depot and McDonald's say they will require workers to wear masks in many of their stores, restaurants, and offices, regardless of vaccination status. On the plus side, the U.S. has finally reached the Biden administration's milestone of 70% of American adults having received at least one COVID shot. The White House is pressuring state and local governments to swiftly adopt policies to protect renters after an eviction moratorium expired over the weekend, potentially pushing millions of Americans out of their homes. Citing a Supreme Court decision in late June, the White House says it's unable to unilaterally extend the moratorium for evictions. Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
The president has not given up the option of legal action. He has asked his team to look to kick the tires, just to keep the analogy going, and look at every authority, every option we have to keep more people in their homes.
The White House emphasized that the federal government has provided $46.5 billion to keep renters in their homes. Economist Gene Sperling, who's been serving as the administration's COVID rescue plan czar, accused the states and cities of being too slow to act.
We are going to do an all-agency review to make sure that we understand any potential reason why state and local governments are not getting funds out, and making sure that we are using all authorities, whatever federal authority that we have.
The focus on states comes as President Biden faces stinging criticism, including from some in his own party, that he was slow to address the end of the moratorium. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the Congressional Black Caucus are among those intensifying pressure on the White House. Four law enforcement officers who responded to the Capitol insurrection have now died by suicide, a sobering toll that doubled on Monday after the Washington Metro Police Department confirmed two of the department's officers who responded on January 6th recently took their own lives. This morning's Mike Gavin has more.
The Metro Police Department says Gunther Hashida was found dead in his home on July 29th. He had been with the department since 2003 and was assigned to the emergency response team with the Special Operations Division. In a GoFundMe account set up by his family, Hashida was described as a devoted and loving husband and father. It said he left behind a wife and three children. Hours after news was released about Hashida's death, the department confirmed the suicide of Officer Kyle DeFreitag in mid-July. DeFreitag served in the city's 5th District and was at the Capitol on January 6th to enforce curfew violations. Jen.
Metro Police Department Officer Jeffrey Smith and Capitol Police Officer Howard Liebengood also ended their own lives after responding to the Capitol. Liebengood's family said the trauma inflicted by the riot prompted him to take his own life. Coming up, breaking down our culture wars.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like you're going 100 miles an hour, barely keeping up. But to cruise through challenges, you need someone who's right there with you. That's what Dell Technologies advisors do. They have the tech advice you need to get past whatever's in front of you and get to where you want to go. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL and do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. COVID has brought about a culture war. At what point should personal freedom yield to the common good? Dennis Wagner of USA Today has written about this and joins us now. Dennis, we're about 18 months into the pandemic, and even with more than 600,000 deaths in the U.S., there's still something of a great divide, as you put it. How so?
Well, I just think that it's pretty clear from the interviews I did that if you talk to average folks, there's a political split that almost nobody finds a middle ground on, and that is you're either convinced that getting vaccinated and wearing a mask puts you in line with science and with government officials and with public health officials who you don't respect or trust, or you're on the other side and you think that you have a public duty or a responsibility for the common good to get vaccinated, to wear a mask. And so you end up with this divide where there's no middle ground, and the split line seems to be common good versus protecting your individual rights.
We just hit the goal of having 70% of American adults having at least one shot. That means 30% have not gotten a shot. Why do they say they're holding out?
They're very clear that they see this as a personal freedom issue. And many of them, in addition to exercising that personal right or freedom not to be vaccinated, not to wear a mask, don't believe that the mask protects them. They cite stuff from social media, other online sources that most cases have been totally debunked, and they are fearful of the vaccine. And to some extent, the concern about the vaccine is understandable. It's new. It's not fully certified by the FDA. And historically, there have been some side effects with vaccines. So clearly, one could argue, yeah, I'm leery of that vaccine. But one could also argue that the side effects to date are negligible from the vaccines. And the life-saving effect of the vaccines has been demonstrated beaucoup.
Mask requirements are making a comeback, but many people are still very much against them. Is that because people don't want to be told what to do?
You know, I can't speak for every single individual. That was the gist of the commentary that the people I talked to. I went out and talked to philosophers, sociologists, lawyers, just all kinds of different people, psychologists, public health experts. And that was basically where they felt the line was being drawn by those who were opposed to wearing the masks. And when I interviewed those, I went out and did street interviews all over Orange County and L.A. County. Spent a whole day going downtown to the beach, to near Disneyland, all over the place. And over, that was the sentiment I got. And it's all tied, you know, it's inextricably tied to political perspectives and to a lot of online sources.
Your story's headline is, at what point should personal freedom yield to the common good? What's the answer?
The answer is that there is no consensus on this. One of the things I did with people that I interviewed was I said, well, right now there's one in 545 Americans have died so far from COVID. If it's one in 100, would that be enough to say, hey, maybe we should wear masks, maybe we all need to get vaccinated. If it's 1 in 50, if it's 1 in 10, if it's 1 in 5, where does the public overwhelmingly decide, yeah, that's enough deaths, so the common good probably supersedes the personal liberty or right?
If the numbers continue to get worse in terms of infections, what happens?
I can't predict the future. I can't even keep up with what's happening today. But I think each one of us can kind of speculate about where things are going. And I think to a large extent, it's going to depend on what the virus does and what we do collectively and individually in response to it.
Thanks, Dennis. Dennis Wagner of USA Today. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Here's Ross and Kay.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
4 weeks after its original deadline, the Biden administration has announced it's reached its goal of getting 70% of U.S. adults at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccine. White House Coronavirus Response Coordinator Jeff Zients.
In the last 7 days alone, 3 million Americans have gotten their first shot. That's the highest 7-day total since July 4th.
Number two.
After recording 7 locally transmitted cases of coronavirus, the first local infections in more than a year, authorities in the Chinese city of Wuhan will begin testing its entire population of 11 million people.
Number three.
Chaos at airports all over the country. Bad weather, staffing shortages, and crews reaching their hourly limits combined to force Spirit Airlines to cancel hundreds of flights, stranding passengers who showed up to airports with no warning. Summer storms around American Airlines' busiest hub, Dallas, led to over 400 of that carrier's mainline flights coming off the schedule. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was on the hot seat behind closed doors last month, part of the state attorney general's probe into sexual misconduct allegations. Cuomo reportedly grilled for some 11 hours by investigators who also toured the executive mansion and Cuomo's offices in Albany, where some of the alleged misconduct took place. Thousands more Afghans at risk of Taliban retaliation because they worked with U.S. organizations during the 20-year war there will get the chance to resettle here as refugees.
We'll continue to work toward an Afghanistan where all Afghans can live in safety and security, and we will continue our support for Afghan institutions and for the gains that the Afghan people have made over the past 20 years.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the program is for Afghans who work for U.S. and NATO military operations but don't meet minimum time in service requirements. Poland's granted a humanitarian visa to a Belarusian Olympic sprinter who says she fears for her safety. Krystyna Tsipanouskaya says after publicly criticizing team management, team officials hustled her to Tokyo's airport, but she refused to board a flight and instead approached Japanese police for help. The BBC reports the leader of a group helping people flee Belarus has been found dead near his home in neighboring Ukraine. It's echoes of Cold War thrillers.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Rasa. Coming up, young workers finally meet in person.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
With remote work making employees feel somewhat isolated, some younger workers are turning digital hangouts and video calls into real-world meetups. Krithika Varagher of The Wall Street Journal has more. Krithika, what are some of the virtual social events people are participating in?
So before the vaccine rollout, people were doing things like virtual scavenger hunts and virtual happy hours. And since the spring and into the summer, they've been doing more in-person activities.
So how did that come about? Give us some examples.
So one person I talked to who's fully remote at her company went to a baseball game last month with her colleagues, about 20 of them, who all worked in the D.C. metro area. And she said that it was good that it was an outdoor activity because people felt more comfortable doing something like that. And people brought their partners and kids in some cases, and that it was a fun event. Someone else I talked to, you know, had a company-wide barbecue organized at someone's backyard who worked there. And someone else I talked to had a week-long company offsite in Slovenia where the company's founders were from.
So some of these folks had never met each other except online, right?
That's right.
So why was it so hard, even before COVID, to make friends at work? Your story points that out. That was interesting.
You know, it's part of a general social trend in American life that people have fewer confidants, fewer close friends in all walks of life, and the office is among those. And I also think there's been a growing tendency among younger generations to switch jobs more often, which can prevent you from making a large number of friends in any one place if you're not like a lifetime employee and accrue friends over time.
Are these happening mostly at smaller companies, or are these things spreading to larger companies, and do they think it's okay to have their people meet outside of work?
Yeah, I think almost any company would want their employees to make friends at work because it's been linked in many studies to employee retention and employee satisfaction. So the companies whose employees I spoke with range from, you know, small startups to very large companies like Qualtrics, which is a big software company, and Veeva has some 5,000 employees, so all kinds of sizes there.
Are there concerns that people who don't want to meet up will be somewhat ostracized by other employees?
I don't know about the ostracized, but I think there can be lags, especially in career progression, if some people are getting out there and some people, whether they're shy or don't live in the area, aren't able to do that. I think there is definitely a concern that there'll be some kind of divergence. So one of the researchers I spoke with said the company should be proactive about making those opportunities happen for their employees, whether they're remote or partially in person and so on, and don't just leave it to their own initiative.
And do we think this is going to continue now that some work may be hybrid forever?
I think so. I think that the desire for people to have work friends will never go away. You really need someone to complain to. And I think, among other things, like, that dynamic will be omnipresent, whether that continues to be on Zoom for a while or people continue meeting up in person. I think the desire to make friends at work, whatever kind of job you have, is never going to go away.
Krithika Varagher of the Wall Street Journal. It's coming up on 30 minutes past the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
You know, in November, I'll celebrate 16 years of hosting this show in one form or another. Whenever those kinds of milestones come up, it's special. And Cuts Clothing is having an anniversary of its own this month. It's been 5 years since Cuts founder Steve Borelli decided to create clothing for any and every occasion, like their signature buttery soft Pika Pro Tri-Blend t-shirts and polos, cozy Hyperloop French Terry fabric hoodies, and more. Everything they make is crafted with custom-engineered fabric for a comfortable fit without compromising on timeless, universally flattering style. If you haven't worn one yourself, it's time to try the only shirt worth wearing. And this week is the perfect time. This month marks the Cuts' fifth anniversary, and they're doing it big with two collection drops, a product launch, and a week-long special event. Join the celebration and get 15% off site-wide by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off and access to anniversary events all month long. cutsclothing.com/Gordon.
This is America's First News, preparing you for the day ahead with headlines and in-depth analysis. This Morning with Gordon Deal.
On this Tuesday, August 3rd, Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay. Some of our top stories and headlines. The U.S. finally reaches the 70% vaccination milestone among adults. Four officers who responded to the January 6th attack on the Capitol have died by suicide. A 100-year-old alleged former Nazi guard will stand trial in Germany. Simone Biles nails her routine on the balance beam. No fans, no problem. Lots of Olympians are used to this scenario. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Lightstream. Apply today for a fixed-rate credit card consolidation loan, and you could save thousands in interest. Go to lightstream.com/deal. You may not feel the pressure that an Olympic star like Simone Biles feels, but it's quite possible you're more anxious or even depressed than you were before the pandemic began. Charles Passy of MarketWatch has written about the hidden cost of our mental health crisis and has more. Charles, how do mental health issues affect productivity?
Well, when you think about it, it's pretty obvious. I mean, if you're suffering from depression or anxiety or any number of mental health issues, it affects you in your everyday life. And, you know, for most of us, 8 hours of everyday life is spent at the workplace or working from home. And so this just has an enormous toll on productivity. The World Health Organization estimates that it is a $1 trillion, yes, trillion with a T, hit to the economy, meaning in terms of lost productivity, people out for X number of days, what have you. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, says that mental health issues result in the U.S. alone 200 million lost work days. That's people basically taking time off because of mental health issues. And the cost for employers, they estimate, is anywhere from $17 to $44 billion, with a B. So there's quite a real toll here.
Has working from home made problems worse for some people?
Absolutely. I mean, I've talked to a bunch of mental health experts, people who work in the field, and they say it's just really, really changed the whole dynamic, and really for two reasons. One is the social isolation. We spend our lives when, you know, pre-pandemic, you know, kibitzing with our colleagues, water cooler chat, all that is a way of distressing. When we're sitting here, as I am right now, alone at home, it's a different environment, and Zoom doesn't really make up for that. The other stress factor here is that for many of us, working at home has meant been a huge juggle, meaning we've had children at home that we've been trying to tend to while we're also working. So it's just been a huge stressor that has only put, you know, more pressure on all of us to function. And so both of those factors combined have really made a troubling situation even worse.
We're speaking with Charles Passy of MarketWatch. Charles, has there been a stigma, or is there still, attached to people who need to take time off for depression or anxiety?
Absolutely. I mean, we still don't like to talk about mental health in this country, even though we've made a lot of great strides. Professionals in the field say, you know, part of the problem is, if, you know, it's one thing to come to your boss and say, look, I'm going to be out today because I have a cold, or I'm going to be out for 3 days because I'm attending to an ailing parent. It's another thing to say, frankly, I'm stressed and overwhelmed and I need to take time off. I mean, there still is a bit of a stigma attached to that. I mean, you can even see, I mean, sort of related and unrelated, you can even see kind of the response to Simone Biles. Some of it was very supportive, but a lot of people said, you know what, she can't take the pressure. So there's a sense of, you know, I think we are a culture that, you know, generally just looks at people needing to tough it out, and having, again, a stigma about mental health. You know, there's a lot, though, that mental health experts say employers can do that they're not doing to make this easier and to make it more comfortable. You know, it ranges from providing key resources and support, counseling even in-house or various, you know, access to counseling, providing time off when needed without question. But frankly, a lot of them just say having better health insurance that you know, pays for, you know, mental health services at a higher or better level would be key to helping this situation.
Charles, you mentioned Biles, and of course there was some nasty comments on social media and things like that, as there always are, and some criticism of her. But do you think that mental health experts in the long run think that such a focus on this will actually bring about some good changes?
Well, I think that what mental health experts say is that any attention to this, and, you know, we also had Naomi Osaka, you know, earlier this year, any attention to mental health issues, any prominent people speaking out about these situations can only be a good thing. You know, obviously, we're not all Olympic athletes, so it's a little different in terms of that. But the mere fact that we have people talking about stress and the toll it takes and how it prevents us to function, even if they're doing so in very different situations from us in our day-to-day workplaces, for most Americans, mental health experts absolutely agree this is a great way to get the word out there that we need to address this situation.
Thanks, Charles. Charles Passy of MarketWatch. Coming up, a good reason to pick up when you don't recognize that number.
Do you love seafood when you're out to eat but never make it for yourself at home? Yeah, me too. But the key to restaurant quality at home starts with high-quality seafood and simple techniques from Wild Alaskan Company. With Wild Alaskan Company, you're getting high-quality, sustainably sourced, wild-caught seafood delivered right to your door. Choose from salmon, whitefish, or a combination. Money back if you're not happy. I went with the Wild Combo Box. Fired it up on the grill with a little garlic, lemon, and parsley. It was like sitting at some dockside restaurant in the last frontier. Each piece of fish was individually wrapped and labeled. Plus, the packaging can be composted. Wild Alaskan Company seafood is always wild, never farmed or modified, and contains no antibiotics. It's how nature intended it. And right now, you can get $15 off your first box of premium seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. That's wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon for $15 off your first box. wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon.
The Mic Drop is brought to you by Dell. Sometimes it feels like your business is going 100 miles an hour, barely keeping up. Dell Technologies advisors have the tech you need to help you get past whatever's in front of you. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL and do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro.
Jennifer Kashinka in for a Gordon Deal. It's time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, Yankees fans haven't had as much to cheer about as they hoped this baseball season, but that changed last night as the Yankee Stadium crowd started chanting MVP towards someone on the field. Unfortunately, it wasn't directed at one of the players in pinstripes. Baltimore Orioles players who were in New York to play the Yankees spotted a cat hanging out in the dugout early in the game, but decided to let the animal be. Before long, however, the cat made its way onto the field, leading to a four-minute-long chase by stadium workers, delighting both the players and fans who chanted MVP and Let's Go Cat as the kitty ducked multiple attempts at capture. Eventually, the cat ran off the field, leading to boos from the fans who were enjoying the show. Orioles broadcaster Kevin Brown may have had the line of the night when he joked that the cat was faster than any of the Yankees players.
Do these people know that you cannot chase a cat and catch it?
Yeah, it's one of the hardest things. If you were there, you could have directed
cats,
this.
Haven't you ever heard
right.
that?
Now, what would you have done to try and get this cat to go in the direction
running
they wanted
it is
to
not
do?
It's not going to help.
Right. At one point, it was funny. They sort of set up a trap where they surrounded it. They had it kind of cornered out by the outfield wall, and you thought maybe that was going to be the end of the cat, and then he just scooted underneath one of their legs and just, flew
Absolutely.
Down the field. Only because the cat wanted to leave the field at one point because there was a door open. They just left open on the side. Only because the cat decided, you know what? I'm done playing with
it's
these
terrified.
People. It's time to leave the field. Now I'm hungry. I want to go sleep, whatever. The cat decided to leave the field.
I don't think he was playing with people chasing him.
Right.
I think he just,
enough. enough of this already. I'm done with you humans. And we know that it's good practice not to believe anything that's too good to be true, especially if the news comes over the phone. That's why you can't fault an Australian woman who dodged multiple calls from what she suspected to be scammers and was shocked when she finally answered the phone and learned she had won a nearly $1.5 million jackpot. The woman from Tasmania told lottery officials that she had been avoiding their phone calls because she didn't recognize the number, then finally picked up after the phone calls persisted. The woman, who was obviously very sensible, plans to be sensible with $1.5 million too, saying that she's going to pay off her bills and then maybe do something fun.
I never answer the phone anymore.
This would have 100% happened to me. Even if they had left the message, too, or I maybe wouldn't have even listened to the message.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I picked up a call from a number that I did not
recognize. Oh, by the way, Mike, you want a $1.5 million? You'd be like, yeah, right.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Again, I have to actually even check the message to even get that far with the whole thing.
Well, she got lucky somehow.
Yeah.
Thanks,
good for her.
Yep, thanks. Coming up ahead, the best and worst states for healthcare.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. Which states have the best and worst health care? Well, the average American spending more than $11,000 a year on personal health care. Personal finance website WalletHub has released its best and worst states list based on 44 key measures, including costs, accessibility, and outcome. The data set ranges from the average monthly insurance premium to physicians per capita to the share of insured population. At the top, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Minnesota, Hawaii, and Maryland. Vermont, at number 6, has the lowest number of infant mortalities at a rate that is 3 times lower than in Mississippi, the highest. The worst states for health care: Alabama, Louisiana, Arkansas, Mississippi, and North Carolina. Louisiana has the lowest share of at-risk adults without a routine doctor visit in the past 2 years. Utah has the lowest average monthly health insurance premium at $405. California has the highest retention rate for medical students. It's 9 minutes before the hour. Here's Rossi Kay.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
More states, cities, and localities are taking action to slow the surge of the Delta variant, as urged by CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky.
We are suggesting both vaccinated and unvaccinated in areas of high disease burden, orange or red on the map, continue to wear masks so they don't bring disease home or to others who are unvaccinated.
The state of Louisiana is mandating masks be worn in all indoor settings, as are San Francisco and 6 other Bay Area counties, while New York City recommends it. As of today, masks are musts for employees in McDonald's, Kohl's, and Target stores, regardless of vaccination status.
Number 2.
South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham is self-isolating for 10 days after learning he tested positive for COVID-19 even after being vaccinated. Graham says he started feeling flu-like symptoms over the weekend, and the U.S. House physician confirmed his case.
Number 3.
5 Miami Beach police officers are charged with misdemeanor battery for allegedly using excessive force in arrests made in a hotel lobby. Hotel surveillance footage and body cam footage show cops apparently kicking and beating a suspect after he was on the floor handcuffed. Miami Beach Police Chief Richard Clements.
This is not what you see from officers. We're going to make sure that we do all that we can to ensure that it does not happen again.
German prosecutors weighing whether to launch a formal investigation into possible failures by officials to properly warn about devastating floods that crashed through the western part of the country last month. More than 180 people were killed. Dozens are still missing. Parts of Utah are still cleaning up from heavy rain Sunday that sent mudslides into neighborhoods. A wall of water and debris that barreled into a canyon near the Gentry Mountain Mine swept away several crews, killing one miner whose body was recovered about 6 miles downstream. Well, if society suffers a complete geopolitical meltdown, New Zealand's the country best prepared to survive and thrive on its own. Anglia Ruskin University researchers tested models reversing recent civilization and collapsing supply chains, international agreements, and global financial structures. The methodology favored island nations: Iceland, the United Kingdom, Australia, specifically Tasmania, and Ireland, the top 5.
Go to an island. Thanks, Rossa. Coming up, no fans, no problem.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the course keeps changing right before your eyes. Whoa! And in order to maneuver it, you need an expert by your side. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the tech solutions you need to help you get out in front and stay ahead of the game. Woo! Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL and do more with modern devices in Windows 10 Pro.
No fans, no problem. A lot has been said about holding an Olympics without fans, but for many Olympians, it's business as usual. As the Australian archery team entered its shoot-off against Chinese Taipei last week, all you could hear was cicadas, some electronic dance music, and a fake heartbeat pumped in over the speakers. But in the near silence, the archers felt right at home. There are few grandstands with fans in the world of archery. The Wall Street Journal says Mary Tucker, a U.S. silver medalist in the air rifle shooting, knows the phenomenon well. She won 3 medals at the World Championships this year. She won 2 NCAA championships at the University of Kentucky, and nearly the same number of spectators showed up to watch those as were allowed into the Osaka shooting range during her first Olympics. Jack Woolley's parents were supposed to fly to Tokyo to watch the Irishman take the mat in Taekwondo, but even just 2 parents was too much for Woolley. They have come to see him fight twice since he was 12, and he prefers it that way. Even for those athletes who have become internationally famous for achievements away from the field of play, the echoes of a silent venue have seemed familiar. That's the way it's been for more than a year, and for many, that's the way it appears it's going to stay for some time. And that'll do it for this hour. For Rossa Kay, I'm Jennifer Kishinka. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.